Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
I appreciate Dallas saying that, and let me just tell you that I'm not one of these people that there has to be an angry guy inside of every clubhouse that is leadership. I think that you're hearing a guy that's concerned, and he's calm. And he's trying to explain to the public what I imagined he was explaining to guys in the clubhouse, because I don't suspect that Dallas Keuchel is the type of dude to say something to the media before saying it to teammates. If you're already having that discussion 17 games into a 60-game season, that doesn't bode well for the type of atmosphere that has already been created for your team. That's troubling to me. And maybe it takes someone who is not of White Sox to be able to stand there and go, guys, this is not the way that we're going to go about winning. This is not it. This is not what we need to be doing if we're going to try and win. I also hear a guy that feels like they're better than Detroit. And he's frustrated that they lost a game that he pitched well in. And lost to a team that he doesn't think is as good as they are.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
The White Sox will get an opportunity in a few minutes to prove that they are better than Detroit yet again after their 8-4 win last night against the Tigers. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We got a lot of cool stuff going on the show today. James Naveau is signed on to be our playoff correspondent for the Blackhawks. My hope is that his correspondence goes on longer than four games. But after watching game one, I'm not quite certain of that. He will join us at 12:20. Dave Revzin from the Big Ten Network is going to join me at 1:30. I was watching him interview Kevin Warren yesterday. I want to ask him about everything that's gone on with college football overall and the Big Ten specifically. And, you know, I have no dog in the fight when it comes to the Big Ten. I'm a Big East guy by alma mater. I'm an SEC guy by grad school. Roll Tide. But if Nebraska really wants to go, is anyone really like, no, Nebraska, please, please don't go and don't take Rutgers with you? We'll get to that a little bit later on. I want to spend the few minutes before first pitch talking a little bit about the White Sox, and then I'm going to move over to another great performance by a starter for the Cubs last night before we move over to some hockey. I'm glad that the White Sox played as well as they played last night. I'm glad that there were multiple people inside that clubhouse who agreed with what Dallas Keuchel said. And then the team went out and actually played like it. It's one thing to be like, yeah, that guy is right, that guy is right. But you saw it. And look, some of this stuff can be difficult to figure out. Obviously, Aloy was 2-for-4. He had a huge home run opposite field, which is great to see from him. But I actually thought that I thought that he was clearly one of the people that Keuchel was talking about. And what I thought was really cool about the at-bats that he had yesterday is that there were a couple of instances, and this was before that single down the right field line, where he's fouling off pitches that he couldn't drive. And that is a professional at-bat. That's the type of thing that you like to see from your guys that are out there doing well. Can we talk a little bit about Matt Foster, too? When he pitched in, when he was the opener, right, because we're not going to call him a starter, when he was the opener last week, you saw that he's got some stuff. They did a little, like, pitching ninja stuff with him yesterday, showing same slot, him tunneling his changeup and his slider, I believe. My God, his changeup yesterday was filthy. Absolutely filthy.
Do you know what school he went to?
Roll Tide.
Roll damn Tide, baby.
You best believe it. That's how we roll. So seeing him pitch well yesterday was really, really good. And seeing the White Sox score 8 runs on 8 hits yesterday was good. Keep in mind that in the last 6 games that the White Sox have played, they've scored a total of 11 runs. So they start the day still in 4th place, 2 games back because Minnesota has had a little bit of a struggle lately. I think, what are they, 11-7? I believe that's right. They're 11-7 with the White Sox being 9-9, 2 games back. Here's your lineup for today, and I know that you're going to leave me if you're interested in watching the White Sox game, although what you could do is you could watch it and then turn the sound down, and you could hang out with me until 2 o'clock and then turn the sound way up. Here's their lineup. Anderson at short, Aloy in left, Abreu at first. Encarnacion is the DH. McCann is behind the plate. Robert in center field, Mazzara in right, Mendick at second, Goins at third. That's because Moncada needs a couple of days off. And I don't know if this is a recovery from COVID thing. I don't know if this is a leg thing. I hope it's not a leg thing because everyone around the White Sox has been telling you, oh, well, you know, he's changed up his workout. He's in best shape of his life. And he's not going to have some of those same leg problems that kept him from playing games last year. And yesterday, you know, Leury Garcia was put on the IL. So they keep just having injury after injury after injury. So we'll talk a lot more about this particular game tomorrow and break it down because the White Sox will be off, and then we can start talking about whether or not they're even going to play St. Louis. I'm not sure, and I guess that they're probably not sure either. So go watch the Sox game if you're interested. You can keep the sound down and listen to me. I'll have some other things that I want to do. But I also want to talk about the Cubs, the best team in baseball right now. And they're getting incredible starting pitching, and you had – two teams that have done an excellent job of getting starters to give you quality starts. It's weird for me to even say this because, you know, I'm not a Cub fan, and I think that this guy probably doesn't need anybody's love and appreciation. He probably would bristle at it. I find myself being extremely happy for John Lester. Now, I know that we're only talking about 3 starts so far, but the fact that he's been this good, and by this good, I mean, as of now, he's one of the league leaders in ERA. And I know Rossi gets mad at me when I start talking about him keeping the ball down, but Lester's been keeping the ball down, and he hasn't gotten hurt. Any jam that he has pitched in so far, he has worked through those jams. It's been really cool to watch him pitch this well, look so focused, look so good, because at the end of last year, you're looking at Lester and going, oh, this is the part where the guy that helped you build up your franchise and helped you get to be a World Series champion, he's already paid for his contract, but this is the part where he falls off the table. Well, he hasn't fallen off the table. He's been even better than that. He's been terrific for the Cubs so far this year. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts, a 1.06 ERA, which this morning was, I believe, third lowest in the majors. Jason Hayward. You know what's interesting about Hayward is he gets really good exit velocity, but it's usually on ground balls. So he'll hit the 112-mile-per-hour screamer, but it's a ground ball. And you're just sitting there going, man, just wait until he elevates some of that stuff. And he did last night with a home run that kind of broke the game open for the Cubs. I want to go back to Lester real quick because we've talked a lot about him on this show. And it's great because we have David Ross on the show every Tuesday at noon. If you're a Cub fan, mark that down and make sure that you're here. It's appointment radio. He's really, really good at explaining things. Since we talk a lot about Lester, I'm curious on how all of this is working. Tommy Hotovy, who is the pitching coach, was on this morning, and here's what he said about why Lester has been so good.
I think, you know, seeing what he's been able to do, not only, you know, through the shutdown and the quarantine that we had, you know, before the season started, and how he tried to manage his throws and all the things we wanted to do to get him, you know, into the season and feeling good and feeling healthy. But, you know, as the game has evolved, it's easy for pitchers to kind of like, you know, kind of want to do more, kind of want to move the ball around more and do different things. And sometimes that works out, you know, and you match up to the right teams and that works. But it's really important in this game to focus on what's given you success in the past too. And sometimes you have to hit that reset button to get back to it. And one thing I'll give credit to, you know, to John is he really, really has worked hard at getting his angle back, recreating some of that angle and that, that John Lester drive kind of down in the strike zone that he had earlier in his career. And you know, what you're starting to see are those early weak swings, the pulled foul balls by righties, the choppers into the ground, those types of things. When you see that angle he's creating, it really, really makes a big difference for him. And then you add in the fact that he's also, you know, mixing in his changeup more, and he's able to pitch backwards a little bit more and do those things. And it's fun to watch. He's a veteran guy and been in some of the biggest games, you know, around. And when he's on a roll like this, he's obviously a guy you want on the bump and in good spots.
That was on the Mully and Haw show this morning. Layla Rahimi, our friend, was sitting in for Mully today. Herbie, was I right about Lester? Like, can I say to Rossi that I was right about Lester? Because I feel like the pitching coach just said I was right about Lester.
I mean, David doesn't want you to be his pitching coach on the show, but you were right.
I just feel like I got some confirmation there that him working lower in the zone is the place where he can't get hurt. But Rossi, obviously he's right because he's a catcher and a manager, but the idea of also understanding when to elevate and using the scouting report and being able to hit those spots up in the zone is an important part of it too. But I'm going to take this as a win for your boy. You may have heard Tommy Hotovy, and occasionally I'm going to do this because I know that sometimes we end up talking in jargon, but like you may have heard Hotovy say pitching backwards. And you're like, what the hell does that mean? Pitching backwards is throwing different pitches in what are traditional counts for other pitches. So if you're thinking that you're going to get on top of a hitter with a fastball and the hitter is thinking, oh, this guy is going to try to get ahead with a fastball, and then you throw a changeup, that's pitching backwards, okay? So Lester, if you're confident in your stuff where you feel like you can get a guy by pitching backwards, that's outstanding. So congratulations to this start that he's off to. Congratulations to the start that the Cubs are off to. These guys are 11-3, have the best winning percentage in baseball. An update from the White Sox game. Tim Anderson worked a 10-pitch count and hit a home run out to left with an exit velocity of 105.9 WCKG. Sox lead 1-0 over Detroit in the first inning.
And we're an amazing at-bat. Great.
No, it was. I'm sitting here watching it going, this is a great at-bat. Fouled off a bunch of pitches. Kind of understood what was being done to him at the time. Really, really had an incredible approach. And then gets rewarded by getting a cookie and taking the cookie and hitting it out of the ballpark. We'll take a break. When we come back, what happened to the Blackhawks last night? Like, we know they lost, but why did they lose? Our Hawks correspondent, James Naveau, is going to join me to explain next here on The Score.
Chicago Cub Ian Happ talks Cubs baseball with Dan Bernstein every Thursday.
There's a picture of Chris and Zach on the field, and the Instagram account actually tagged the picture with both of them and said, big bro, little bro. And Zach looks like he's 4'4", and Chris looks like he's 7'8". Like, it's hilarious. A really good picture.
Ian Happ with Dan Bernstein. Thursdays on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Official radio home of the Cubs and a radio.com sports station. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2. On Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Gajula hacked it toward the middle, nobody home for Chicago. And back come the Knights. Marchessault deflected to Smith right in. He scored! What a shot! Riley Smith settled down a rolling puck and roofed a backhander. 4-1 now.
I think by the time that Riley Smith scored his second goal, most Blackhawks fans checked out. The third goal was kind of indicative of how the night was going. That doesn't change the fact that we're going to talk about it, because we are. We brought James Naveau into our show to be our hockey correspondent for the playoffs. You can check him on the Madhouse podcast with our very own Jay Zawoski. They do post games. They went live last night. You can watch them. You can listen to them. It's fun to listen to them feel the exact same way that most Blackhawks fans felt while they were watching that disaster that happened up in Edmonton against Las Vegas. So he joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you could just go to alpamonteford.com. Our playoff correspondent, James Naveau of NBC Chicago and the Madhouse podcast, joins me now here on The Score. Hello, James.
Good afternoon, Mr. Holmes. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Where would you like to start? Because I know Fells was saying it's a pretty simple segment today. You just say that the Blackhawks suck and Las Vegas is better than them. But there's a lot more there. Where would you like to start? Because I have a list of questions, but I want to know what you want to talk about.
Well, I think the one thing that probably everybody is talking about, at least from like what we've seen both on our post-game show last night and in our Twitter feeds, probably Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat need to put them on milk cartons. They can't seem to find those guys. We can start there.
Yeah, let's talk about overall. You have the Blackhawks with, 20 shots? And then you don't have the guys that you're counting on for offensive firepower even taking shots. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, obviously, there is some credit that needs to be given to the Golden Knights. They're a very good defensive team when it comes to their forward group, and that can really wreak havoc on a team when they're able to kind of isolate guys in the situation where the Golden Knights had last change and they were able to kind of dictate the matchups against Kane and DeBrincat. So credit does need to be given to them for that. But I also just don't think that DeBrincat and Kane are working very well together right now. And it seems to me that they're kind of dragging each other down a little bit. They're not really generating any quality scoring chances when they're on the ice together. I think it's pretty telling last night that when you look at the shots for and the shots against while those guys were on the ice, normally you see defensemen are the guys who have the most shot attempts against them. It was actually DeBrincat and Kane last night. They were getting badly outchanced, badly outworked. And I know that we had talked a little bit before yesterday's game about Jeremy Colleton possibly being patient with them and kind of letting them work through whatever issues they've been going through. But after a performance like last night when they just could not get the puck on the net, couldn't generate any pressure at all, I think it's probably time that Colleton needs to pull the trigger and needs to make some changes to those lines to try to get one or both of those guys going.
I heard you on the podcast say that you were out there breaking the glass and saying, all right, it's time to change the line. So what is your suggestion for how the lines should be constructed?
Well, I think right now the Blackhawks have two incredibly good forwards in terms of possession on the wings, and that's Dominic Kubalik and Brandon Saad. And I know that obviously there's value to having those guys skating with Jonathan Toews. There's value to having that quality of a line. But when you have so many important forwards struggling up and down your lineup, I feel like it's probably going to be beneficial ultimately to break them up just because it maybe evens out the possession numbers a little bit. And so what I ended up going with is I kept Kubalik with Toews in my ideal line combinations and then brought up Drake Caggiula, who, as you saw in game two of the Edmonton series, when the Blackhawks didn't have him, it really screws up their chemistry a little bit because he can do so many things well. He is a guy that can score occasionally. He's a guy that can add some physicality and some grit. And so I feel like he's a logical replacement for Saad on that line. So I bumped him up. I had Brandon Saad and Patrick Kane playing with Kirby Dach. I feel like Dach has been having a really good playoffs despite the fact that DeBrincat and Kane have been struggling so badly, and I like to see that. I like that he's not reliant on the star power of those guys to succeed, so I put him between those two, and then the big one is to have Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat reunite on a line. They clearly play their best hockey together. Both of them have been struggling badly in the playoffs, and I thought that maybe putting them with David Kampf, who I thought showed some really good offensive upside last night and has been playing some of the best defensive hockey on this team during these playoffs, putting him with them, I felt like could maybe kickstart both of them. So that's kind of the logic and the thought process I went with. And I gotta say, it's not easy to do when there's so many forwards struggling. You really have to be careful with how you jumble things back up, but I feel like that balance of grit and speed and skill could potentially be good for the Blackhawks and at least give them a little bit of a better chance to be competitive against a deep and talented Vegas team.
With a team like this, that I think that the Blackhawks are outgunned here. I think that Vegas is just a lot better than them, which makes me believe that the way that you go about trying to win is you got to do all the dirty work. There's got to be a ton of greasy goals. And in some cases, that means flipping the puck at the net occasionally to allow for some rebounds. Why didn't we see that last night? Why didn't we see, because there looked like there were opportunities to maybe not line up the perfect shot, but a shot that's going to allow for there to be some activity in front of Leonard.
Well, heck, I mean, it's not like you have to take only perfect shots, and the Blackhawks not only passed up opportunities to fire pucks on net from the point, but you saw multiple times last night they would get in on the rush, have potentially good opportunities, and then do nothing with them. Like, let's just start there. You had Kirby Dach in the first period of the game split the Vegas defense beautifully at a 2-on-1 coming in. The defender drops down to block the pass. That means shoot. You shoot that puck, and Kirby Dach instead just kind of skated past the net and didn't do anything with it. You expect that from a rookie maybe occasionally, but then later in the game, Jonathan Toews split two defenders and had a wide open lane to the net and instead tried to drop pass to Dominic Kubalik for some reason. And then you also had Duncan Keith kind of do the same thing where he had a shooting opportunity and he just didn't do it. It's one thing to have your rookie forwards be doing that, but then to have like your veterans doing the same thing, that's just an issue of, oh, you're trying to, you know, make the perfect pass, like you said, the perfect shot, where instead it's just drive to the net and make something happen. Challenge Robin Leonard. Like, you looked at a situation like last night where he kept losing his skate blade. The one shot they had on him the first time that it happened went off the post, and the second time they didn't get a single shot on him while he's literally playing on one foot. If that's not a perfect microcosm of how the Blackhawks just were not being aggressive enough last night, then nothing is, because that was just preposterous watching that.
You told us before game one about puck possession when it comes to Las Vegas, that this is something that they're really, really good at. Did we see that bear out last night in game one?
See, that's one of the areas I think that we can maybe look at a little bit of a positive for the Blackhawks, right? Because early in the game, Vegas was outchancing them by a pretty wide margin. Vegas was really controlling the puck well, and I thought they were moving it pretty effectively against the Blackhawks. But when you look at the heat map, these are available on a website called Natural Stat Trick, if Blackhawks fans want to check this out, the Hawks were keeping the Golden Knights to the outside of the ice a lot in the first two periods of that game last night. They were not giving Vegas very many good high-danger scoring chances, and I thought they were playing pretty well defensively, and that's a great way to cope when Vegas is just possessing the puck all the time, is to keep them to the outside, not allow them easy opportunities from in close. And I thought the Blackhawks were doing largely a good job of that through the first two periods and change of that game. So I think that that's a good way to counter it. Like, Vegas is going to have the puck quite a bit. The best way to counter that is to do what the Blackhawks are doing, to keep forcing them to the outside. And then it's to take advantage of the opportunities that you do get. The Blackhawks didn't have, they had maybe one or two second chance opportunities last night. And that's a pretty easy explanation of why they only had 20 shots on net in the hockey game. You've got to take advantage of the opportunities when they're there. And so the Blackhawks did the first part of this right, where they were keeping Vegas to the outside, not giving up very many high danger chances. They just failed to do the second part, and they couldn't take advantage of the chances that they themselves were given.
We're talking with James Naveau, who is going to be our postseason correspondent for the Hawks. You can follow him on Twitter at James Naveau, spelled N-E-V-E-A-U. Duncan Keith was on the ice for all four goals, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
Is that a reason why all four goals were scored?
I don't think so, necessarily. I would probably, if I'm ranking things that went wrong on those plays, I would say Keith is probably number three or four on most of them. I thought he didn't have his best game. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. But at the same time, there were other things going on those goals that probably helped to make his number just in that category just look bad. Look, Corey Crawford, the first goal of the game, gave up the short side goal, did not cover the post. Like, I was talking to Herbie about this before I came on. He just wasn't covering the post. Like, there was no screen, there was no nothing, just bad positioning on the part of Crawford. And then that third goal, the deflating goal in the game where it hits his shoulder and rolls into the net. You can even see it when you look at the kind of the Corsi progression through the game in terms of shot attempts. The Blackhawks were starting to even things out at that point. And they were really coming at Las Vegas hard. As soon as that goal went in, it completely let the air out of the Blackhawks' sails, and they ended up giving up another goal a short time after that. I think that Keith, he can have better games, obviously. I didn't think he was awful, but he wasn't great either. And they do need him to be great to win this series, for the record. But I would probably pin those, at least those two goals, probably more on Corey Crawford than anybody else.
Now let's talk about Adam Boqvist. Is he regressing or progressing as the postseason starts?
Is it gressing when it's like basically staying the same? Like, that's to me, I feel like Boqvist has been very up and down in these playoffs. Like, and that's to be expected. He's a rookie defenseman. Blue liners do not develop nearly as quickly as forwards. We're seeing that very clearly right now with how Kirby Dach has kind of taken off in terms of his stock, as opposed to the way Boqvist is kind of playing right now. I keep seeing like good glimpses of what Boqvist can do. He's definitely, I think in last night's game, he was doing a good job of kind of adhering to Jeremy Colliton's defensive scheme and system. And I thought that he was in the right place a lot of the time, but I also don't see him making the types of like heady offensive plays that we're used to seeing from him. I think that he's probably playing a little bit tentatively right now. That would probably be my best guess. I think that he just needs to try to play with more confidence, and that's easier said than done for a rookie going into his first playoff series. And I just think that ultimately at the end of the day, if you're looking at this long term, I feel like we're just seeing some growing pains from Adam Boqvist, simple as that. And I think that him playing in these playoffs is going to do nothing but do good things for him, because he's going to learn from this, I think.
Okay. I hope that we do see him learn from it, and he might have to learn quick from it. I know that there are a lot of Blackhawks fans that kind of reflexively are like, man, well, these guys are out out physicaling us. I don't even know if that's a word. But they'll then want the Blackhawks to fight back, to push back, get more physical. You got to get more physical. I got two questions here. Is the Blackhawks roster capable of being physical in the way that we kind of stereotypically think of? And two, if the answer to one is no, how can they have a more physical presence in these games against Las Vegas?
Well, the answer to the first question is an emphatic no, because they don't have, honestly, the three guys who would probably be best suited to playing that type of a game. They're all out. Zach Smith, Andrew Shaw, and Brent Seabrook are all out of the mix. Like, that's a huge blow. The Blackhawks aren't exactly a physically imposing team, even with those guys. But take them out of the mix, and then what? Your toughest guy is probably Connor Murphy. That's really not going to get the job done in terms of physicality. So to get to your second question, which I think is a really interesting one, is how do you kind of cope with that? The answer is pretty simple, but it's also very difficult to execute. That's just to get the puck. Like, honestly, when you look at the stat sheet and you see that a team is massively out hitting another team, the reason they're racking up so many hits is they don't have the puck. And that is a really tricky thing with Vegas, because they're able to kind of win those physical battles and hold on to the puck. They're just a very well-rounded team. So I think that what the Blackhawks need to do is more of what they were doing in game one, which is kind of keeping Vegas to the outside of the ice, limit the number of high danger chances you're going to see. But then you definitely have to, like, make the most of your possessions when you have them. And that will involve doing what they did in the Edmonton series, taking shots from the point, getting guys to the front of the net, whether it's a Highmore, whether it's a Dock, whether it's a Taves, get those guys into high danger scoring opportunities, get some traffic in front of Robin Leonard, for crying out loud. And to borrow an old adage from Joel Quenneville, you just got to score greasy goals. Like, this cannot be a series of who can score the prettier goal, because I'll tell you what, the Blackhawks will lose that every single time to this Vegas team. They have to be willing to get to those tough areas, and they do have guys that are capable of winning the puck battles to get there. They just have to go out there and execute that vision.
If there's a Hawks fan that's like, man, that was really disappointing, and then they see the third goal, which was soft, and they're frustrated by that goal, and they go, this Vegas team looks like it might be overwhelming. Is there any silver lining that you can give them going into game two tomorrow afternoon?
I've got two of them. And I think that one of them kind of played out in the second period and the start of the third period. And that is how well Connor Murphy and Calvin DeHaan played against the Vegas top line. I felt like that pairing had a really solid evening. Once Colleton kind of isolated that matchup and saw that they were doing well against that line, that top line's production did go down. I thought that that was a really interesting strategic decision by him. It's one that I would like to see him keep going to, especially when we get into games 3 and 4 and the Blackhawks can pick that matchup off of faceoffs. That's going to be absolutely huge for them. So definitely a good game from those two. So hang your hat on that one a little bit, but also keep this in mind about the special teams. We talked yesterday that Vegas's penalty kill is not very good. And while the Blackhawks did not score on the power play yesterday, and they did pass up a couple of like really good shots on those power plays, they still generated at least 10 scoring chances on their two power plays in that game. And then when they were on the penalty kill and Vegas was able to like get the power play going themselves, they only had 3 chances total on their two power plays last night, and the Blackhawks scored a shorthanded goal. If this series can be won by the Blackhawks, they're going to have to continue to press their advantage on special teams, because I think they do have an edge there. And I think that that's something, if they can execute and they can score, especially on the power play, that can potentially be an equalizer. And that's something that cannot be overlooked after that first game.
Which do you prefer, late night tension filled hockey or hockey that's going to interfere with your baseball watching?
You know me, Lawrence. I'm a sports omnivore. I like watching as many different things as I can. I'll watch soccer in the morning, baseball in the afternoon, hockey at night. I'm probably one of the rare people in Chicago who actually likes the late night starts, because I feel like it doesn't interfere with anything else. I'm probably going to get tarred and feathered for saying that, but It's out there. I like the 9:30 starts. Come fight me, I guess.
All right. Can I ask you for an opinion on the Cubs?
Sure. What opinion would you like? I have many.
All right. What do you think of their 11-3 start?
I think that their offense, we kind of looked at going into the season, and we thought that maybe if they could get certain guys hot, that the kind of shortened season would probably benefit them. And I think that it clearly has. I like that David Ross has been willing to kind of exploit matchups when needed, but also to kind of go with the hot hand like he's going to do with a guy like an Ian Happ or a Nico Horner when it seems like they're going well. I like all of those things. And then obviously the starting pitching has been so good this season. And the good thing about that is you're not trying to sustain it for 162 games. You're only trying to sustain it for 60. So that's a little, you're going to still have some hiccups here and there, especially when you have guys like Tyler Chatwood and Alec Mills in the mix. But just that starting pitching has been so great to see. And it's something that's a little bit more sustainable just because it is a shortened season. That bullpen still terrifies me, man. Like, I know that they're getting better performances out of certain guys right now, and that's good, but can they sustain that for 60 games? That's the big question, and that's the thing that whenever I watch them, I'm kind of dreading in the back of my head, how's this going to play out when a John Lester or a Kyle Hendricks comes out of the game? But it's been fun, man. It's been great to see them playing so well, and I know that they're definitely getting a lot of attention around baseball. It seems like they do a lot of things well, and they could be a tough out come October.
I was joking earlier that I'm, like, so happy for John Lester because of how well he's pitching. And he's doing, like, the old guy pitching thing where, like, he's making you hit his pitches. He's keeping the ball low. And he's just like, hey, this is what I got to do. I can't overpower people necessarily, but I'm going to still get you out. It's been really fun to watch.
That is the old man pitching thing is exact. I was talking to a buddy of mine today about that, and it is so remarkable seeing the changes that he made in his game. He's not just trying to obviously blow the fastball by dudes anymore. He can't do it. Like, I love the fact that we're in year six of his contract with the Cubs. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And I love that it's going to end up becoming a discussion about whether or not to bring him back. And the answer is not just going to immediately be, nah, he's had it. Like, he's such a warrior, dude. And I know that term gets overused a lot, but John Lester goes out there and just grinds every single start. And that is so hard to find in baseball, especially in a guy who's played as many years as he has. It's been awesome to see him make those adjustments. And he's just such a great competitor. And I think it does rub off on the guys around him.
I agree with you. I appreciate you shifting gears so that we could talk a little baseball along with the hockey. Let's talk again on Friday, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that there's a better effort from the Hawks in game two of this series.
And maybe we can talk about whether or not Arsenal re-sign Aubameyang for next season. We can maybe get some transfer portal news going, too.
I'd be fine with that. I'd be totally fine with that. Was he 30? 30 years old?
What, still almost won the Golden Boot in the Premier League, very clearly one of the top scorers in England, man. I'd say bring him back if you can. I love what Mikel Arteta is doing with that squad right now.
I do too, and I'm glad that, I'm glad that everything is that could have gone right for them at the end after what was a dreadful season ended up going all right. And the fact that they were able to go through Man City on their way to the FA Cup just makes me happy. That's just for you, JJ Stankovic. Just for you.
Well, hopefully we didn't alienate all your listeners with soccer talk. I promise we'll stick to hockey next time.
Hey, you know what? There's more soccer fans kind of hiding in the wilderness than you would believe, and they like the occasional mention of a little bit of footy. So, I mean, this is a pretty well-rounded segment. We did Blackhawks, we did Cubs, and then we did a little bit of footy. I think we're winning. I really do. I think that we're absolutely winning. James, thanks so much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you for having me on, bud. Always great talking to you.
That's James Naveau. He does great work for NBCChicago.com, and he is going to be our Blackhawks correspondent for the playoffs. Maybe we'll throw Cubs and soccer in there when we talk to him, too. I want to get back to talking about the Cubs, and Lester in particular, but this entire rotation so far, they've been pretty good. How good? I'll talk about that next here on The Score.
Blackhawks lose. They fall in Game 1 to the Golden Knights in Round 1 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs. Keep it on the score as we recap the loss, analyze what went wrong, and get you ready for Game 2 right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I would say that the Cubs are going to be more than all right if they keep playing as well as they're playing. These guys have played 14 games so far. They're sitting there at 11-3 after their win against Cleveland last night. I mean, what they've done so far has been great. They've got the best win percentage in the game. They continue to get incredible starting pitching. And the starting pitching that they're getting, to illustrate it, quality start. So, 6 innings or more, 3 runs or less. Their rotation so far has had 10 of them. That's, you're living good if that's the type of production you're getting from your, and everyone in the rotation has 2 quality starts. Now, the Chatwood thing was a little scary last week, although it wasn't like your typical Chatwood game. He wasn't walking the yard. He was just getting hit. And I'd rather have a guy get hit than put himself in danger by walking people and setting up bad scenarios for everyone around him. We've been talking a lot about John Lester, and There's a point that Nouveau made that I wanted to amplify a little bit. I feel like with John Lester, if you look at, you can make an argument that John Lester is the greatest free agent signing in Chicago sports history.
Marian Hossa.
I think it's Hossa, but you can make the argument that it's Lester. Some people would say Julius Peppers. This guy's contract, he's already paid for it. Like, the fact that you ended up with a World Series, anything else after that you were getting from Lester is gravy. And now the point that you're at with him is a point that you didn't think that you would be at. You were thinking, oh, well, this was going to be the end of John Lester. And look, there's still, what, 60% of the season left, or 66% of the season left, and maybe it does go downhill. But the fact that you've gotten this type of production from him in the first 3 starts of the season, great. Let's go back to what David Ross said yesterday, because one of the things I was worried about was him having 9 days off because he hadn't pitched, and then there was the cancellation of the Cardinals series, and then you're going to ask him to start out and pitch this series against Cleveland. Here's what Rossi told me about what they did to try and make sure that John was sharp before he went out there last night.
That's too many days for sure. So I think you got to, you know, you put the onus on the player and guys like Johnny that have been around understand adjusting. But he threw a good bullpen a couple of days ago to try to just stay sharp. And like you said earlier, there's no substitute for real competition and getting in there against another team and, you know, seeing, having guys punish you for your mistakes. But it is hard to stay sharp, but, you know, shoot, there's nothing to complain about. We were all adjusting in a season in certain times and, you know, we'll do the best we can to adjust and continue to stay on the path that we were on. And we'll see how it goes tonight.
And how did it go? It went really well. Another quality start for John Lester. I haven't had the chance to really talk to you about this because, you know, there's been all sorts of other stuff that's happened. We've got some time in here, so if you want to text in your thoughts, if you're a Cub fan, how do you feel about the way things are going so far? Because I think there were a lot of people who were correctly worried about the bullpen. But if you can continue to get solid starting pitching, it becomes less of an issue. I do know that there's one big issue in that bullpen right now. We will focus a little bit on talking about that coming up. But overall, how good do you feel about where things stand with your Cubs? Let's discuss. 312-644-6767. And if you don't know,
That's now the number that you can use to both call and text the score. We'll talk more Cubs coming up next here on The Score.
Hey, Cubs fans, it's Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Cubs. Join Ron Coomer and me right here to listen to every exciting Cubs game.
Swinging a bouncing ball to short, Newman tries to go to third, Baez throws him out at third base.
Listen to every Cubs game right here on 670 The Score, Chicago's official radio home of the Cubs, a radio.com sports station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.